You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Gila. We talk about how one single word in a conversation with an acquaintance inspired her to make a change in her professional life. It's a little bit oversimplified, to be honest, but it's also the crux of the conversation. Along the way, we discuss the challenges of parenting philosophies, the feeling of isolation a lot of adults feel and experience, and even have a delightful conversation, if I do say so myself, about road trip snacks. Are you ready? Me too. Let's go. Dr. Gila, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. Are you ready for a chat?
I am so ready. And I have to say, imperfect adulting, I feel like I'm the poster child. Like, yes, that is me. Totally, perfectly imperfect in the adulting world.
Yeah. I love it. All right. So I begin most of my interviews by asking the person on the other side of the conversation, where do you call home? What part of the world are you in?
So right now I'm in Cold Spring, New York. It is about an hour to an hour and a half north of New York City. And the weather is rapidly changing right now. So
very cool. Very cool. So before we dive into the topic of the day, I'd like to get to know people a little bit better. So tell me as little or as much as you want about yourself outside of work. It can be related to your family, but it doesn't have to be. It could be a hobby you have or the nicknames of your pets, whatever you want to share with us today.
Oh my goodness. Big broad question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a big thing about me is that I'm a single mom. That is a big part of my identity. I also think, as a like big picture thing, you know, we grow up thinking that our lives are going to be like this sort of logical straight trajectory, and mine has been anything but. And it's been an adventure and a ride. And you know, I've lived in lots of different places and have multiple degrees and a few different careers. And so it's been fun. And also, you know, I'm now older and
wiser.
leaning into more of the rooted lifestyle. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that this is not, that we're not to the topic of the day, but I don't know that I've ever really talked to very many people who've actually experienced that linear path.
I know, right?
I think that we all have this idea that is foisted upon us by, I don't know, fifth grade teachers or something. That's like, if you follow these steps, this is going to be your path and it'll always be there. And mm-hmm. There's also rumors that that used to be the case for people long ago, but I don't meet very many people outside of the very obvious, like people who are on sort of preset tracks for surgeons and things like that. Science, mm-hmm. You know, if you want to go to Mars, you've got like one path and one shot. but other than that, you know, mm-hmm. It's like most people sort of wander around and change their mind and then deal with the struggle of that because you feel like you've taken a wrong turn and you've done something wrong and that 100%. Everybody else is doing it right except you.
Yeah.
But
100%. And I think that that's highly relevant to the work that I do because I support mostly single parents of what I say beautifully complex kids. And so often what we thought life was going to look like, right, when you're 12 years old and sort of imagining and daydreaming about what your adult life is going to look like is probably very, very different than what it looks like. And I do think we're sold this bill of goods, right? We're like, it's a disservice that there are so many messages about like what is quote unquote normal, what is expected. And it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking everyone does this and social media doesn't help, right? Like everyone goes to the beach for vacation. Everyone has, you know, the white picket fence lifestyle. And I just think the reality is so far from that. And it doesn't do anyone any good to pretend otherwise.
I agree. I do. And we could talk about that all day, but you picked a different topic for today's conversation. It's aligned. It's definitely aligned. We'll come back to this kind of thing before. So we are going to talk about a time in your life when somebody in your circle described a toddler as naughty. Mm. And that somehow directly or indirectly inspired you to add parent coaching to your professional bag of tricks.
Yeah.
And so does that sound like a fun conversation to talk about today?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, it was a pivot point for me, but certainly not an isolated pivot point. So the context is that I started out as a psychologist and a neuropsychologist. I actually originally was a medical writer and editor, speaking of convoluted trajectories, but then I was a psychologist and a neuropsychologist. And what I like to tell people is that even with all my fancy training and experience and degrees and all that stuff, being a single parent to a strong-willed, I will say, and a beautifully complex kiddo was challenging, is challenging, right? And it, even with all of my background. And so I did a lot of work on really trying to figure out how to meet his needs the way that he deserves, and to do it in a way that is aligned for me, and to figure out what that even means, right?
Right.
And to do it in a way where I don't, you know, lose myself in the process, but to figure out how to navigate this. So I did a lot of work around that, and really, I was always interested in what I call connection-based parenting. But I really took a deeper dive into that when we hit some challenges, some behavioral challenges, and some social challenges. And so in that process, I did become even more sort of passionate about this lens of seeing kids through this compassionate lens of that they're struggling. They're not bad kids. They're not giving you a hard time. They're having a hard time, right? They are struggling and they deserve our support. They're not misbehaving and deserve our punishment. And so, it really shifted a lot of things for my relationship with my kid, for his behavior, for my own life. And so it was, and I was still on that path. It's always a work in progress. And that was, you know, I would say kind of towards the beginning. And so I was still like knee deep and really actively working on this. And I saw a child psychologist talking about her toddler and saying, oh, I can already tell he's going to be naughty. Right.
So
and
that and so in the word naughty
mm-hmm.
impacted you, the word it, choice.
It just really, it struck me. And I want to say, you know, this person I'm sure is an amazing parent, and I'm not, you know, I don't know the specifics of their parenting, but just this notion of, especially a child psychologist, using that lens of, which is understandable because this is what society trains us to do. This is the typical message and the way that we, most of us, were raised. And it's the pervasive lens that we are surrounded by. And it just really, in that moment, like smacked me in the face. And I just felt this, this passion ignite of, I want to do something about this. Like I feel called to, almost like protect these kiddos, right? To support parents in the struggle, because again, I don't think parents are failing or doing something wrong. I think that we are doing the best we can with the resources that we have available. And for most of us, those resources include really deeply ingrained messaging about kids being naughty and manipulative and misbehaving and defiant and all of these really critical words. And that lens, I think, really it prevents us from being able to really show up for our kids to support them in the challenges. And, you know, again, that's nothing is black and white or extreme. And,
right.
But,
nothing
you know,
is black and white. And
yeah,
we can bring it back to this concept of normal, because normal is a moving target, right?
Mm-hmm.
It
Mm-hmm.
absolutely shifts based on what we've experienced in our life. If you grow up in a house of vegetarians, that is your normal, right?
Totally.
That is your normal. And if you go to your neighbor's house and they own a butcher shop, I don't even know if those exist anymore, but like they're,
They do.
heavily meat. Okay, there you go. Heavily meat based. That's their normal. And neither one of them is actually right or wrong. However, if you shift from something that feels normal to you into something that's foreign, the perception, the experience can feel very wrong. It feels strange. And so when we talk about that, sometimes having somebody reflect back to us what the perspective of choices is gives us an ability to figure out where our normal slides into the choice that we want to make. But other times it's, we're looking for a normal, like what are other people doing so I know what I'm doing and whether or not it's right. One of the things that, as somebody who, I've got not everybody goes through the parenting experience, and not everybody who's listening to this will be a parent of any kind, but we all have parents, right? This is this very, very strange thing that all of us have parents. So we, by default, start with, okay, well, what it means to be an adult, does that come with parenting, right? And for me, I had this concept that the adults around me growing up knew what they were doing. And then when I got to that point in my life, I was like, oh, no, they did not. Nobody knew. And I don't know. And that felt very wrong. I felt like I should know.
It's the imposter syndrome, right? It's
Ah, oh, flying. But parenting for me and step parenting has very much been, building the plane as it is rocketing through the air, figuring it out as I'm going along. And I'm sure there are people out there who knew how to do it before they got there. I'm jealous. The reason I wanted to mention that is that you are a person who had a significant amount of education, and still you were in a position to identify what your own philosophies were when you got to the point where you were actually parenting your kid.
And that's why I like to say that, not to sound, highfalutin, look at all my degrees, but to validate for parents that, even with a PhD, this is hard stuff. Right? Like, this is, it's challenging. And I want to say, to your point about, even if someone is listening, they're not a parent, I think a lot of my work about parenting and with parents, I am very often pointing out that it almost all applies to adults too. And, there's so many parallels, first of all, in interacting with ourselves, right? And second of all, in interacting with other adults. And the same summer that naughty comment really struck me, it might have even been the same week, I was listening to one of Brené Brown's. It's like the only Brené Brown thing I've ever listened to. I'm not like a huge Brené Brown fan, but there was something that she said that really struck me, because this was actually shortly after my son's dad and I had separated and he moved across the country. And there was something that she said that really struck me that is aligned with this. And it is, I'm paraphrasing, basically that she studies people who like wholehearted living, I think is her term. And she said there's two like big mindsets that many of them have in common, and it's like a yin yang, they go hand in hand. One is they see people's behavior and they see the world as everyone is doing the best that they can. So this ability to sort of give the benefit of the doubt and to have that compassion and empathy. But importantly, there's a second piece, which is that they also recognize and give themselves permission to set their boundaries, even in the context of understanding where something is coming from. And I think the same is true with kids and with relationships. It struck me because this was, I think, in my relationship with my kid's dad, I think I spent a lot of time leaning too much into the empathy piece, because I could see where I can understand where it's coming from. I get it, right? And so having compassion and empathy for that, and not really giving myself permission to do that second piece of, I understand where it's coming from, and it doesn't mean that I have to stick around for it, right?
Right. So let me give a metaphor that I think explains that, right? If you're a bad driver and I see you as being a bad driver, that's the best you can do. And I can acknowledge that, okay, this is the best you can do. But separate and aside from that, I can decide, you know what? I'm going to take a cab because it's you being a bad driver. That's the best you can do. And we all have that every single day. That's actually a separate decision of whether or not I want to get in the car with you.
Yeah, I love that. And drunk driving also, right? Even
sure.
more so, right?
I thought of that before brain went through that while I was coming up with the metaphor, but it is exactly that same thing. It's like choosing not to get into the car, sure.
Yeah. I understand why you are not going to be a good driver in this moment. And
yes.
I'm
and
not
I choose.
Going to put myself in that situation. And
right.
The
and
same
kids, when they're having a meltdown, it's like, okay, dude, you're 4, you don't have the skills to regulate. I totally get it.
Yeah.
And also, this is annoying the ever-living crap out of me, and we both need to retreat to our corners.
Right.
You get to watch 15 minutes of whatever nonsense is on television, and I'm going to sit in the corner and get myself together.
Yeah. And I will say, when it comes to a adult-child relationship, there is a little bit more of us as adults, like supporting kids, you know, working on our own discomfort in that moment so that we can show up and support our kids. Having said that, right, as opposed to an adult-adult relationship,
sure.
Although you still want to
It
work
still
on, you
happens,
still
right?
want to
It
work
still
on
happens,
that.
yeah.
Having said that, I think that it is a very common misconception that connection-based parenting, peaceful parenting, gentle parenting, whatever you want to call it, that it is permissive and that you can't have any structure or personal boundaries or
Right.
anything like that. And I think that that is, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions.
The other thing I tell people, like, so now my youngest kid is now an adult. So it's been a long time since I've been in this situation. But I mean, when I'm talking to people with young kids, and if I was to choose a parenting philosophy, it would be to that I, one of the things I think I shifted between parenting philosophies, you know, as the day went on.
Yeah.
Peaceful from 10 to 10:30. Kidding. But one of the jokes I would have is I was like, listen, you know, there's not a person, no matter who you are or what you know or how much you've practiced it, I don't know anybody who can be in, you know, Target with 4 kids under the age of 5 the week after you have the flu in the middle of rush hour and somebody has a tantrum and not lose your ever living mind. You know, like you're going to hit a minute at some point in your life where you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Monkeys, let's go. We're out of
Yeah.
here. You know, no candy bar for you. And that's it.
Yeah.
Try again tomorrow. And you can put yourself in a position. It took me a long time you would look at people who are like, oh, well, gently do this and so on and so forth. And I'd be like, yes. And then I'd be like, well, obviously I suck because at 4:35, when the witching hour starts, I don't have the capacity to do that anymore. And I was like, it must be me. And I'm like, no. Actually, this is real life. And, you know, we do the best we can. And absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
and I don't think, you know, this is part of why I don't actually typically use the term gentle parenting, because, right, it suggests that everything's always gentle and, you know,
please move
easy
away
and
from the
lovely
ledge of
and
the cliff.
right. Yes. I prefer, so I use connection-based parenting. If I like the word that I think actually best captures it, but I'll tell you why I don't use it, is respectful parenting.
Yeah,
And
I get that. Yeah.
I don't use it because I think respect is one of the most misunderstood
Right.
terms.
It gets observant. Like,
Misused. People use respect to mean obedience,
yes.
compliance,
Yeah.
deference, right? And
Deferent.
that's
Yes.
not what I mean.
You're not being respectful. Yes.
But really, you know, the way I define it is, you know, seeing and treating the other person as if their perception and experience and voice are valid and worthy. Right.
Right.
And everyone deserves that, whether they're 2 weeks old or, you know, 97 years old.
And being respectful doesn't mean you have to agree. Like you can, like, right. And so I don't know how old your
Totally.
son is, but when you get to the point where kids are, you know, they're asserting themselves and their own opinions about things, they will have opinions and they will do things that you won't necessarily agree with. And one of my very favorite stories about this, which is funny, and that's why it works so well, is one of my kids was pushing back on doing math homework. And they were like, I'm never going to use this. I don't understand why I'm going to have to do it. And that was their opinion, right? And I looked down at what it was, and it was two-digit addition and subtraction, decimal and two-digit. And I was like, listen, I am an artist, and there are 1,000 times where you would have said this and you would have had my full support. But this, as it turns out, is money, and you are going to use this every day of your life, and you have to sit down and do your homework. So I see your point. I respect your argument. Very, very valid. Tush in the seat. Get it done.
Yeah, but they didn't have that context, right?
Like they didn't have that context.
You were able to add information to the system in a respectful way, right?
If they had shown me the quadratic equation, I would be like, yes, true. Never once used it ever after I finished my calculus class. Don't understand why I had to learn it still to this day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nonetheless, it's better to get it done. So very good. So you were a psychologist and a clinical psychologist before you added parent coaching to your skill set. And the parent coaching was somewhat inspired by this observation of this person using a word that you reacted to in this scenario. What about parent coaching? Why did you feel a need to add parent coaching to your other skill set is my question. I know many people do that, but I'm curious if you're willing to speak to why you added it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to say here, but really at the end of the day, I think that I felt really passionately about, I saw so many parents struggling. I knew how it felt. I was struggling for a long time, and I was so grateful for the support that I got. And I think that I was just about to say something and I totally lost it.
So we were talking about adding on to your very traditional academic resume.
So here's I'm going to zoom out for a minute. Here's like, this might get deeper, but than you intended. But so it's super cheesy, but I definitely, so I am the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors.
Okay.
And I feel like that has always sort of like been this like low level vibration in my life, and that I feel really like I want to make the world a better place, which I know sounds incredibly cheesy, but ultimately I increasingly like realized, I think the way we make the world a better place is by raising generations who are more compassionate, more empathic, more emotionally intelligent and able to self-regulate and communicate. And the way we do that is by supporting their parents, right? And so that's like the big picture piece. And then I just remembered the one thing that I was about to say, which is that part of me was like, I have done all this work and I only have one kid, so I might as well help other parents, right? I mean, my father likes to tease me that I make a PhD out of things, he says.
Well, I was wondering, like, I did wonder, because there was a chance there are people, I love to like learn things and rack up certificates. So you could have just said, somebody sent me an email and I was like, yeah, let's add it on.
I am totally a certification hoarder. Absolutely. I love learning and I love like, and it is, I think, partly related to that imposter syndrome, right? You're like constantly trying to like master whatever it is. I'm sure that's part of it too.
So that's very good. All right. So how did your life or your experience shift after you have the observation? You're like, I am reacting to this word naughty, that this person who's in the industry of teaching people how to speak about their children, which I think is not the most helpful thing I've heard this week, and I'd like to offer another solution. How did your life change professionally or personally when you started coaching parents with your ideas?
So first of all, I talked myself out of it initially.
Okay.
Several times.
Who am I?
And then COVID hit. And then I still hemmed and hawed about it and talked myself out of it. And then I finally did it, and I got a parent coach certification, because I get a certification, right? You don't actually have to, but I mean, I like to get certifications.
Me too.
And, you know, I think, how did my life change? I mean, my life has changed a lot. You know, one of the things is that also appealed about something like parent coaching is, for my own life and my own flexibility, I am a single parent of a kid who doesn't just kind of wake up and go to, you know, his regular public school and is happy and does his homework and goes to sleep. Like, that's, you know, and it's
are there kids that do that? Because none of them.
I don't know. I don't, not in my life. So, you know, it was challenging to have a clinical job where you're expected, you know, you have to be there certain hours and you have to make up the hours if you miss them. And it just was quite stressful. So in a lot of ways, it has really affected my professional life to, you know, have this personal situation. And the truth is that I've only just recently really started to understand the extent that that is true. I think I didn't fully, like, I guess I didn't really fully acknowledge it to myself, you know, not just, and I think that it has really affected that. So that was one thing, is that it's been, and I feel like I have learned 12 new languages being an online entrepreneur. There's a lot to learn. And one of the beautiful things about being a parent coach is that, you know, I feel like it can feel really isolating to be a single parent of a beautifully complex kid. And the more into the parent coaching space I am, the more it does feel, it's clear to me that I'm not alone in this, and and the more passionately I feel about helping other parents realize they are not alone in it. And, you know, I think that in the online world, you can sort of find the people who are aligned with how you see the world and how you want to parent. And in your physical, like, I am here geographically and the people physically around me, it's often harder. And so that can feel really isolating as well. So,
right. One of the things that I will say, as somebody who's been through it a couple of times, is it definitely surprised me how isolating the experience of supporting kids and being a step parent and a parent can feel. Yeah. And as I went through different waves of it, one of the theories I have aligns with your single parent thing. There's like I use the word mainstream just to, like, whatever your culture is and wherever you are, predominantly defined by your school organization or whatever your primary community is. There's like a mainstream of people who do a certain amount of things. So if you're in a traditional, Westernized school, you've got sports and you've got kids who excel academically. And anytime you have somebody who veers even slightly outside of that, that person then begins to feel, I mean, the word that really does fit is the marginalized. They're pushed out to the margin. And you have the perception that you are unsupported and you need support. The really strange thing about that is that that is where you find the people who need support. And so those folks feel like they're not there. And one of the places, so it happens with academics, it happens if you have a kid who doesn't want to do sports, team sports that are in schools, right? There's all kinds of sports that you can do. And they either find another group, the parent and the kid either find another group to glom onto, or they feel unsupported. Yeah. And it can really, really be a big impact on the success and the trajectory of a family and a kid. And what's crazy about it is that I'm pretty sure that if you look at the numbers of the kids, like if you were to statistically say, it's not the majority of people who fit into that box is the crazy thing. The bigger number is the people who are like, football is not for me. And, you know, like, but that still is the path. And so it's so important to have people who, and this is Brené Brown. She's like, when you share your story, other people, you know, hear it and they're like, oh my God, I am not weird. Yeah. And so when you stand up and say, hey, I'm a single mom, other people were like, yay, me too. When I was like, I couldn't hide it. I was like, I'm the stepmom. People were like, hey, wow, you know, there you are. And so it is interesting that this whole representation and unity thing is so hard for parents, but I don't know if it, I don't know where it comes from. I mean, I thought that like, I thought it was going to be like, you know, brunches and I don't know what I thought it was. I did not think that it was going to be what it is, which is sitting in your car waiting for your kid to get out of school, sitting in your car waiting for your kid to like come out of practice, trying to get everybody where they need to go on time, not really surrounded by many other people, and sometimes being surrounded by people you don't really like, you know, but you're there in the room with them anyway because you're like, oh, well, all right.
Yeah. And I want to add, because you were saying like you feel really like you're not supported. I think there's also a piece that is very common where you start to think, what's wrong with me? Or what's wrong with my kid? And what am I doing wrong? And one place where, so I've, one area where this has shown up for me somewhat recently is the area of school resistance and school avoidance.
School avoidance is a big one. You probably feel like you're the only person. And
you feel like you're the only one, right? And I'm like, my kid's the only one in this whole school who's having this. And people act like you're the only
one. That is the thing.
And they don't just act like it. It's not necessarily they act like your kid is the only one who is avoiding school, but it's like, well, every kid doesn't really like school. I'm like, no, that's not like, there's degrees and there's differences in the experience. Yeah. And I have to tell you, like, people right now, like, I feel so much differently about it. I feel like there are so many families who struggle with school resistance, school avoidance, school refusal, school not being a workable solution, a workable or like traditional schooling not being a good fit. And you're sort of made to feel like you're the outlier, you're doing something wrong, there's something weird or, you know, wrong about you as a parent or your child or how you are handling it. And I want to say, if anyone is listening and feeling that way, I mean, I see it. Like, there are, I think 99% of the parents that I have spoken to recently, it's been amazing. I don't know if this is just like magnetic, but like, everyone is struggling with school resistance, avoidance, refusal, school behavior issues, struggling with. And so we have this perception that like, well, this is just what school is like, and kids just like do it, and that's what happens, and you go on your way. And there's so many people that it's not an easy
and they just disappear. And wouldn't it be like a fantasy if the people who were the professionals in the school were to acknowledge it and just say it to you right off? So four kids went through my family. I have seen all of them struggle with organization at the age of middle school, which is when that happens. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. One of them is an engineer. They did not struggle with organization. So, okay. So that kid was hardwired for organization from, you know, day one. But the rest of them, they go through a time. It is when they learn, right? Is when they learn. Every single time, like, so in the first time I was a step parent, I wasn't super involved, but like, just, you know, hammered by the teachers and the administrators, like, oh, well, this is how they should do it. And you feel like you're not doing enough. By the time we got to the last one, I'm sitting there, you know, and they're like, well, you know, they should just write it down. I'm like, you know, come on, guys. Like, you're the professionals who work with these kids all the time. This is absolutely age appropriate. This is when they're supposed to be. Like, don't make it such like a do or die situation. Like, this is when you're learning it. You have these 2 or 3 years to practice and screw this up, and we're going to work with you. And if they just presented it like that, then you wouldn't feel like you were screwing it up, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and also like a little acknowledgement of the range of human experience, right? Like, every skill has this whole bell curve, right? Like, it's not this one data point and everyone is right here in the same spot. And even normal, I'm using air quotes if you're listening to the podcast, right? Like, whatever normal means, there's still a huge range within normal limits, as we say, right? Like, within expectations. And I think there isn't enough acknowledgement of that.
I do too. I do too. And I like the by the time, you know, it's I'm ready to graduate out of the education system, which is why it never gets any better, because once you're out, you're very much like, okay, I've served my time and I no longer need to beat my head against the wall with this, which is a terrible thing for the people who come after, because the problem is just like repeat. Repeat and repeat. But at the same time, like, I mean, they have just beaten me down. You know, it's like, I'm out. All right. So we could talk about this forever and go on and on, but we need to actually wrap it up. So I'm going to ask you one last question about like the whole clinical psychology and coaching, because this is an area of confusion for clients. So like people are really well trained to know what's like, well, not really well trained, but they're aware of what psychology and psychiatry and doctors, where they fit into the who we go to for advice. And coaching is a terrible description of a service. It's like it means everything and nothing all at the same time. Tennis coach, running coach, parent, nobody knows, right? So you can tell me to buzz off about this if you don't want to answer it. But as a person who actually hits both of these things, how do you sort of navigate this line between what is one thing and what is the other, and where people go for what?
Okay, so I know you think you're asking a simple question, but you're not.
No, I know I'm not. I tried to make it like, how do you sort of walk this line?
I will tell you that I think I delayed officially becoming a parent coach by at least a year because of this question, because of my confusion and discomfort. How do I ethically and legally straddle that line? What is coaching versus therapy? How do we separate them? And I'll tell you where I am now, and it's
and that's all I'm
evolving. Yes. So I think that, first of all, people who tell you, you know, psychology or therapy, I would say therapy looks backwards and coaching
backwards.
They're full of BS.
That's right.
That is not true. And you know, with all due respect, like they mean well, but that is not a distinguishing. So I think that it is an overlapping Venn diagram, and I have had to work on being comfortable with that overlap. I think that when it comes to relationship coaching, most of what we do in coaching could fall under the psychology umbrella, depending on the type of psychology that you practice. In coaching, let's see. Okay, so I have lots of different ways. So part of it is a legal difference and an insurance difference. So if you're going to use insurance for therapy, you have a diagnosis and you're working on treating the diagnosis. And in coaching, you should not be working on treating a diagnosis. So pretty clearly for coaching, you shouldn't be diagnosing and you shouldn't be treating a diagnosis. Having said that, a lot of the things that we do in therapy could be part of coaching, but there are things in therapy that I think should not be part of coaching. And to be honest, I see a lot of coaches doing things that make me uncomfortable as a therapist, because to me, it does really go into the land of therapy.
Right. And what's funny is they don't know. They probably don't know.
They don't know.
So they're never going to get that. They're never going to draw the line there, because they aren't therapists and they won't draw the line. They don't know that that's the line.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. They mean well and they don't know. And it can be a little, I don't want to say, I mean, it is a little dangerous. There are some places, like, especially when we get into like trauma work and anxiety work and depression work. So if there is a diagnosable problem that you are trying to treat, that is definitely therapy, not coaching. But there is, I think, more overlap than.
That is one of the ways that I define it. I say, you know, like if you need a therapeutic regimen, like you need a diagnosis and you need a therapy with a goal, like the goal of the therapy when a doctor gives you a diagnosis is predefined by the doctor. Mm-hmm. They're designating, this is where you're working towards, and this is how we get you there. And that's one of the places that I personally draw the line.
Yeah.
Like
I just hesitate, because that is a very medical model of therapy.
Very medical
and
model, yeah.
Not all therapy is, especially if you're going through insurance, you have to play the medical model game. But if you're not using insurance, and sometimes even if you are, it's not, you know, the medical model has drawbacks.
Right. No, and I just think it's an interesting thing because people will get into these discussions all the time with coaches or, you know, with anybody else. People who are non-professional, they're non-professional, so they're not lawyers, they're not accountants, and they're not, you know, doctors. And they're like, well, you can't do that. And I always think it's a very interesting conversation because it's like, that's probably true, but they don't know it. They veered into this area, you know, it's like
Yeah.
they veered into
And
this
that,
area, and they're not going to be the people to self-regulate saying, oh, I'm not supposed to give you tax advice. I didn't go to tax school, so I didn't know that, you know.
Well, so, and that brings up, thank you. That brings up a really important point that I think is important for consumers to know. One difference between therapy and coaching is that to do therapy, you need to meet certain qualifications and criteria, and there is oversight and regulations. Depending on where you live, for a lot of people here in New York State, like there's pretty much no regulations for coaching.
I
So
don't think, yeah, like none. It is the Wild
it's
West
the Wild West.
of,
Yeah.
yeah.
So your coach may or may not have actual training experience, you know, skills
All
related
of
to that.
those things.
So it is challenging. So I do think that I do think going in, being an educated consumer about it and making sure that you feel like you're in good hands is important.
One of the most established ways to like see the difference that it, I think is really interesting is in the diet space. So I came out of the fitness world, right? So in Florida, where I live, the only people who can actually give you a therapeutic weight loss prescription, which is otherwise known as a diet, are doctors and dietitians, right? And yet, every single personal trainer, weight loss coach, weight loss prescription, like the number of people who give diets and publish diets and do that is like infinite, right? It's like infinite. Come follow like this diet. Come follow this. This will be your result. And it's like it's just absolutely like a disconnect. It's like all right, it's supposed to be, you know, like metabolic, but nobody follows the rules. Anyway.
Well, and I do want to say, like, I don't think you necessarily need a degree or a certificate. Like, I am sure there are plenty of really beautifully supportive coaches who don't have a formal like degree or training or
Oh
something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Me for one. Like, but and coaches, as a this is not a rule or a truism all the time, but a lot of coaches are experienced-based teachers. Like they begin with their experience. They begin with, and that can be supplemented by their education. And that can be incredibly valuable, especially when you're talking about something that is, how do I live through this, right? So it's not what does this look like in the textbook, but it's like, how do I live through it? How did you navigate through it? Can you be my co-partner and walk me through this as I
Absolutely.
navigate it?
Right.
And you know, so yes, thank you for going down that road. You could have told me to buzz off and been like, no, Amy, we cannot talk about it. All right, so
I
tell
will say there's more to say on it, but I, you know, it's
me.
more complicated than I think people realize.
Yeah, or not. Like, you know, so it can be both. But it's not clear. It's not clear, and it's not well defined. And maybe that's on purpose by somebody. Okay, tell people what you do. You support single parents, and tell people what you do and where they can find you. And then you have a fantastic special offer that I'll share with everybody.
I do actually have a virtual therapy practice. So if you live in New York State and you're looking for a therapist, I do that. But mostly I'm doing parent coaching these days, and I'm at drgilaparenting.com. I'm sure you're going to have the URL. I have a special interest in supporting single parents. I'm increasingly focused on that, but I do and have worked with partnered parents. And I will say, I hear so often, I'm a partnered parent, I'm married, but I sure feel like a single parent, right? I am basically functioning like a single parent. So I have workshops and private coaching, one-on-one coaching, and a group program called the Single Parentology Lab, and various other things. So the best way to find out about all of that is to hop on my email list, and you'll get a weekly email from me and heads up on everything coming up and usually discounts and stuff like that. So.
Perfect. All right. That is really good. And the links will be in both the show notes and then also in the email newsletter that I send out, which is the best way to get those. You have a fantastic package of resources that is available to the audience, which includes a PDF guide, Tantrums, Meltdowns, and Rages. Oh my, an audio guided meditation for single parents and a video, what every parent needs to know when the shit hits the fan. And so those all have special links and they're in the show notes. And then if you're listening and watching this while you're doing something else, walking on the treadmill, on your way to work, in your car, and you're not obviously going to write all these things down, go to imperfectadulting.com, sign up for the email community, and I email them directly to your inbox, and then you just click on them. You just click on them, and they take you where you want to go. It's the best way to go. Now, Dr. Gila, time for the last three questions. These are rapid fire,
oh,
just for fun. I know, okay. This makes people nervous, but I do them for just for fun. This is like a brainchild of mine because I love stuff like this, but about probably 9 out of 10 people that start
I did
down this
on
path.
Another podcast, and I could tell he did not like one of my answers. So one of his, he was doing free association words, and one of them was marriage is, and I said optional, and he did not like that.
That's so funny. All right, very good. He wanted you to say something else. I have many stories about that, but that's all right, very good. You spent a lot of time in school racking up all of these degrees, thinking way
don't test me.
When you were okay. Thinking way back to elementary school, if you went to traditional school, which I actually don't know if you did, do you remember if you had a favorite cafeteria lunch? And if so, what was it?
We didn't have a cafeteria at my school.
You did not. So you just took your lunch every single day from home?
Took my lunch. Yeah.
All right, let's what was the favorite thing that you brought from home for lunch when you were in elementary school, if you remember?
So here's my answer. I have no idea what I brought for lunch, but I can tell you that my best friend always had one of those little packets that had like the little square of cheese dip and then crackers, like the
little packet
crackers.
And
yeah.
you dip it in or you spread it out.
And we never bought those. And I was like, ooh, those look really good.
That is.
But I have no idea what I ate.
You were not paying attention. Okay, very good. That may not have been a very good question. All right, very. So then on the school theme, when you were in high school, did you have a favorite like band or musical artist? And if so, are you willing and brave enough to share with us who you were a fan of when you were in high school?
I will. And you might be surprised. So Harry Chapin was my favorite in high school.
There you go.
The old school.
There you go. All right. Now, what is your favorite long drive or road trip snack that you can kind of buy along the road, like in a truck stop or something?
Okay. So my kid and I have our traditional road trip snack, which is the popcorners, the sweet and salty flavor.
Are those the triangles?
They're triangles.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's like one of our.
It's like the kettle corn flavor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are delicious.
And we also like to do Sour Patch Kids.
Ah, very. You would be popular in our road trips as well. All right. Very good. That's it, Dr. Gila. You've been a wonderful guest today on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.